we can talk about our feud over the weekend. Our first fight, Eric. How does it make you feel? Is it kind of, are you not nostalgic? What is it? If you were in a relationship and you have your first fight.
Like it's a milestone?
It's a milestone, yes. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah. I was actually, I spent like 2 days crying in my bedroom.
Wow.
Just really upset about the situation. Your name may have been taken in vain a few times.
Is it my name in vain if you just use it and yell? Is that, I guess.
I mean, I guess it depends on like how many people consider you a deity, you know?
Like, only me.
Well, turns out. If there's at least one, I guess I guess me using it in an opposite fashion could technically be construed as taking it in vain.
What's the phrase? My body is a temple, or treat your body like a temple.
Yeah.
So therefore I am a deity.
Do you actually treat your body like a temple?
No, that's true.
So yeah,
I guess probably not then.
But
oh well.
No. I like it, it didn't escalate to levels of, you know, previous Trib Jazz writers arguing. So
no.
You know.
We got it resolved.
Yeah. Even though you were wrong.
No, I was right.
No.
We took it to Joe and Joe decided I was right.
Which doesn't mean that you were right.
That's true. But a lot of evidence.
You bringing up your nylon
right.
Calculus just annoyed the crap out of me. Like, come on, man.
All right.
Overthinking it.
Let's tell the audience what we were fighting about. So every week we do a weekly plan of what we're going to be writing next week, right?
Yeah.
And one of Eric's great ideas for his plan for this week was to write an article about how the Jazz were doing with their three-point shooting.
Yeah.
My point was that the Jazz had played three games. They've now played four games. It doesn't matter. The sample size is so small on three games of three-point shooting that it is incredibly insignificant. In fact, and this is where the nylon calculus part comes in,
mm-hmm.
Nylon calculus has done the research that says in order for it to be a 50-50 split between skill and luck and noise, you need to have about 750 three-point attempts. So that's about 20, 25 games worth. We had three. I said, Eric, we can write that story later on in the season, but not now. And you said, go shove it.
Yeah. here's my incredibly well-reasoned counter-argument to all of that statistical BS that you brought up.
Yeah.
Which is that I didn't care about statistical validity. Like, I wasn't trying to draw any conclusions about whether or not the early sample size was indicative of what was to come. My sole rationale was Jazz fans came into the season believing this team would hit a ton of three-pointers, and in the first two games they did not. 8 and 6.
Yeah.
And literally all I wanted to do was take a snapshot of the moment and say, here's what they've done thus far. In game three, they followed up with 13 three-pointers in the first half. And I made the point. I could have inserted a line saying, this may not be statistically valid going forward. I just wanted to take a snapshot of the moment because mm-hmm. it was something that a lot of Jazz fans had asked me about on social media. They'd reached out. It was something they were talking about. I just wanted to answer the question saying, here's what they've done, and don't get too wrapped up about it because, yeah, it may not mean anything yet because we are so new in the season.
My point, and this is way too long for an opening now,
yeah.
is that not only is it not prescriptive, not only does it not mean anything for the season moving forward, it's not even descriptive because it is 95% luck when you only have 60 three-point attempts or 100 three-point attempts or whatever it is. So it's not descriptive of what actually. Like, yes, the Jazz made 6 and 8 threes, and that was a low percentage. I think they shot 25% in the first two games. And it just, like, doesn't even reflect what kinds of shots they were getting or how good of shooters they are or any of those kind of things.
I know. And just my point is, like, for you, like, I was just annoyed that you were shooting it down.
Yeah.
Because it had nothing.
It's not.
I didn't need to run it by you, Larson.
It's true. And it's not my job to
not the boss
shoot things down. So after I shot it down.
I kind of just had the thought, like, this is what you do in the triple team every game. You take a one-game snapshot of what happened, and you do a statistical analysis of things. And, like, how is that any more statistically valid than me doing a three-game analysis of something? It's not. That is the answer. So next time, stay in your lane, Barson. That's all I'm going to say.
I mean, I think that's a good point. I guess I would say I think I try to A, look at the sample size issues, and B, I think I like to say, hey, if this continues, this is reflective of X. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is this entire job is the XKCD comic, right? Like, that we're just interpreting a random number generator spitting out results. Like, that's all this job is. It's a great job to be that guy, but yeah, we're interpreting human random number generators and what happens with them.
Yeah, so let me have it. That's the now what's the word that I'm looking for? That's the ultimate takeaway from this. Just shut up next time and let me have my story.
If you think this would have been a good story, call. No, we don't. We're not going to put out a Twitter poll or anything.
No.
Welcome into the Weekly Run. This is the Utah Jazz podcast of the Salt Lake Tribune. I'm Andy Larson. This is Eric Walden. Sorry for the long introduction. I don't know. Let's pretend that was pulling back the curtain.
Yeah, I'm sure people are fascinated by what you and I arguing about a story.
Meh, true. All right. Well, let's get into...
Man, we're vain.
Let's get into some Jazz talk then.
Yeah, let's actually do that. Let's discuss the Jazz instead of us.
And the random number generators that are the Jazz. In particular, Mike Conley, random generator, point guard number one, has the results have been poor so far. And on the 20-sided dice of life, he's rolled like 4 ones in a row. I mean, he had, I guess it was 2 ones in the first 2 games, and then game 3, he probably rolled a 4. And then last night against the Phoenix Suns, also just rolled a 1 with 0-7. 3 point or 0-7 shooting from the field,
yeah,
and
now,
1 point and 1 assist.
And now after that Suns game, we have to go back and question, did he actually roll a 4 against the Kings, or did they just have like, or was Sacramento like rolling dice that were like loaded against them?
Yeah.
And that skewed the results.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
No, I think he rolled a 4. I thought he played well.
I thought he played well as well. That was a rhetorical question.
But agreed. Like, we now have to look at it in the the Kings played okay last night, I guess, so yeah. That might make more of the results valid. But, yeah, anyway, I know, like, the party line here is there's no reason to be worried about Mike Conley. And I think that's true. I'm pretty sure that's true. It is just a weird thing that's happened, though.
Yeah, it's very bizarre. I mean, we came into the season thinking, okay, yeah, you know, it'll take some guys some time to acclimate, but at the same time it's like, here's Mike Conley, he's been, you know, kind of on the periphery of the all-star discussion for the better part of his 12-year career. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of figured he's the savvy veteran point guard, and if anyone can kind of, you know, not take too long to get things going, it'll be him, you know, and everything will be great because he's a better shooter than Ricky Rubio and he's a good enough defender that the defense won't suffer. And I think that part has remained true, although he definitely has been, he could stand to not foul so much. But yeah, it's,
I mean, that was kind of only last night.
If you had told me that, I want to say he had 5 fouls in one of the previous games as well.
Did he? Okay.
But yeah, if you had told me that after 4 games, he'd be shooting 20% from the floor and 15% from 3-point range, and honestly just have like some long stretches where he looks a little bit lost out there and looks like he's forcing it at other times, where like the missed shots that he doesn't expect to miss are just like so kind of messing with him and compelling him to feel like, okay, I need to do something to like justify my existence out on the court right now.
Yeah.
And it's just making it worse, you know, it's like it's having this compounding effect, this snowball effect. I wouldn't have believed you if you had suggested that, but here we are.
Yeah, no, and it is interesting. Like, I do think a lot of it's mental at this point. Obviously, you know, you see him trying to make things happen when it's kind of weird that he is. Clearly, Quinn has adjusted the rotation to put less of an emphasis on him. You know, kind of you saw the rotation in the first 2 games involved Mike Conley kind of leading a second unit and giving Donovan and Rudy a chance to to rest together, and he's swapped that up, and now it's kind of Donovan at the end of the first and third quarter, and Donovan coming out of the game early to facilitate that. But yeah, it is interesting. You know, like I've kind of watched his shots in practice a little bit, and you were at today's practice, so maybe this has changed. I was on the flight back home. He's not shooting the ball even in practice to the level that you would think Mike Conley would be able to make shots.
Yeah, in the first couple practices they had before game one, I felt like he was shooting really well, and subsequently. Yeah, you kind of notice the carryover where he's not, you know, in practice, like, guys make just an ungodly number, you know, an ungodly percentage of shots. Like, yeah. it doesn't correlate to what you see in games because, you know, they're not being guarded, the pressure's not the same, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. But, yeah, even in that situation, you know, yeah, we're not seeing him be quite as effective even just in practice shots as you would expect.
Yeah, like, I mean, I'm making these numbers up, but, like, Ricky Rubio may have been, like, a 50% three-point shooter in practice. Is that about right?
Sure.
Dante might be, like, a 40 to 45% three-point shooter in practice. Someone like Donovan Mitchell or George Hill was amazing in practice, is maybe, like, 60 or 70%, you know, like, they just hit a lot more shots. So it was surprising to see Mike Conley on the lower half of that than on the upper half of that, given, you know, his career as a shooter so far, and certainly how well he did last season. Now, I would say you look at his seasons previous, and he has started slow in the past.
Yes.
I believe it's the last two or three seasons where he really has gotten out to a slow October.
I just looked at the last two.
Okay.
You can go back and look at that story on sltrib.com/jazz. In which, I kind of investigate the last two seasons of Mike Conley, in which, last year in the first eight games, I forgot the numbers, but sub 40% shooting over the course of those eight games. He only had, like, two games where he was over 50%. Poor from three-point range as well. And it was the same thing the year before where he wound up playing only 12 games and... Yeah, again, sub 40% shooting, sub 30% three-point shooting, just really getting off to slow starts to the season before really kind of picking it up. And not that he's, like, the world's most efficient shooter. I mean, he's, 44% from the field for his career?
Yep.
So, you know, he's not, like, a John Stockton hyper-selective type shooter who's going to be over 50% all the time. But still, you know, he's demonstrated that he gets off to slower starts and then he picks it up.
Yeah.
So, that, at the end of the day, like, you know, and again, that's just a two-season sample, the last 2 years before this one. But that gives me, like, some level of encouragement to think, you know, some additional level of encouragement, I guess. And who knows? Maybe this might be misplaced. Maybe Mike Conley is 30-whatever years old and, like, just
forgot how to play basketball,
acclimate to this new system that he's in and whatever. But
it's clearly not just a system thing, right?
Like, no.
Yeah.
No.
I think some of it is he's, like, thinking about when to shoot and when to pass a little bit too much.
Yes.
But, like, that's – regardless, he's still just missing some open shots he should hit. I mean, he has yet to hit a mid-range shot, which is crazy. He has 1 for 9 from 10 to 16 feet. It's just,
those offhand floaters that he's been so renowned for have been, like, pretty consistently short.
Yeah.
These quotes that he gave after the first two games were really kind of telling. I mean, in the first one where he shot 1 for 16, he said that he was confused and at the point of, like, wondering what he needed to do. And then after the second game, you know, when he missed his first 6 shots and finished 3 for 11, I want to say, he said that, you know, he equated his situation to being in quicksand and, you know, fighting harder just made him go deeper into the hole. And so I think those two quotes to me were kind of telling that, you know, a lot of this is kind of mental for him right now. And once, you know, he kind of becomes a little more judicious in picking when to pass and when to shoot and, like, figuring out when is a good time for those, like, I think we'll see a lot of these shooting issues kind of disappear.
Yeah, and just straight up making shots.
I guess that would help.
Yeah,
we will see his poor shooting end when he starts making more shots.
Again,
that's the kind of analysis you can get here.
On the even worse on the XKCD podcast, all right, podcast comic. That would be an interesting podcast. Yeah, it's weird. I think it's, yeah. I mean, we're pretty sure it's going to be fine. There just aren't guys. There are guys who have fallen off a cliff at 32 or have kind of been able not to play at 32. Nobody's done it like this though. No. Like the way people fall off a cliff at 32 is that they can't move anymore, and that's not what it is with Conley. Conley's moving fine.
Yeah.
You know, it's
yeah. This isn't the equivalent of NFL running backs turning 30 and just all of a sudden being too slow and
yeah. I mean, yeah. He can move. He's getting reasonable shots. I think it's just they're not going in. All right, but who has been? Has Emmanuel Mudiay been better than Mike Conley this season?
In spurts, he has been.
Yeah. In spurts, he's been better. In spurts, he's been worse.
Yeah. You had questions about his decision-making capacity.
Boy, have those shown themselves.
And, yeah, that's been, like, an extremely valid concern. And then there have been other times where he's seeing that guy making the cut and making the right read and finding him. There have been times where he has been, like, noticing, okay, I can get to the hoop and get a layup at this point. You know, there have been some tangible moments of progress, and then there are, you know, because he's Emmanuel Mudiay, there are also these moments where you're just like shaking your head and averting your eyes and saying, man, what were you thinking on that play?
But yeah, my favorite moment of Emmanuel Mudiay's season was when he didn't take a shot, and it was in game one where, like, he comes off a screen, has you know, probably 8 feet of space to shoot a mid-range shot, but because there are 17 seconds left on the shot clock or whatever, he decided not to. And it was like, holy cow, this is good. Congratulations. Yeah. Like, you did something where you thought about maybe the team before yourself.
You saw the lessons of Quinn and Co. taking hold in the tentacles of his brain at that point.
Now, you know, I was like, oh, yeah, maybe he's been quinified, but I think
few plays later, you see him, like, charge headlong into two defenders and spin and reverse pivot and then wind up throwing up a 15-foot fadeaway that has no chance of going.
Yeah, and it is surprising how frequently his teammates are open when he does that. But, oh well. Defensively, he's been better. I think he still too frequently gives up after doing one hard defensive thing. Like, so if he has to go around a screen, he's actually been better at screen navigation than I thought he would be. But then it's like, all right, if he has to screen and then help and be in the right spot in later on in the possession, then it's like asking too much. But he's honestly, this is progress for Emmanuel Mudiay.
Yeah. And yeah, I honestly don't know that he's ever going to be like a super effective defender. So the question, I guess, with him will be, can he be decent enough with that first action to, like, just not immediately give up baskets? And then can he, like, sufficiently limit those bad impulses that he clearly are embedded within him and driving at him, and, like, that he's, like, they're just his worst tendencies. And, you know, we have seen him, like, we have moments of, like, being able to, like, fight off those demons, you know. It's like, it's like, yeah, got the stereotypical angel on the one shoulder and the demon on the other, and, you know, oh, you should drive the shot and take it one-on-one. You should drive the lane and take a one-on-one shot, even though bogey's open in the corner. And then, you know, the angel, no, yeah, don't do that, Emmanuel. You can make the right read.
It is, yeah. It is kind of funny to see, like, how frequently, like, you know, Rudy Gobert will get the ball at the top of the key, and the offense kind of flows through him at that point, and you have a whole bunch of different actions, and it's like, Emmanuel Mudiay comes off a screen. Let's go for the next play number two on that, you know? Let's get Donovan or Joe the ball here, and let's run something. But anyway, it would also help him, by the way, defensively, if behind him Ed Davis had found a way to be helpful. I think he's been working hard in the first four games. He has not been a rim protector, and, you know, we knew that the finishing at the rim would be painful, and he has not been a good rim finisher so far.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say this in Emmanuel Mudiay's defense. Like, he's provided them a scoring lift off the bench at times. You know, I mean, there were probably two of those four games where he made a demonstrable difference by, you know, making some good reads, by going to the basket at opportune times. And, you know, he's scored 12 points a game on those two occasions, and I think looked generally okay in those cases. And,
yeah.
You know, I guess I will just – I know you and I discussed him a lot during the preseason and had very kind of differing opinions on what he was capable of, and I think we've both been proven right to some extent. And, you know, I think there's also been sufficient evidence thus far that for, you know, a veteran minimum contract, like –
Yeah, that's fine.
He's been a worthy gamble.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, I guess the bar is basically like replacement level point guard, right? So, like, is he better than literal Trey Burke? Is he better than Yogi Ferrell? Is he better than, you know, all the other scoring guards that exist in the league that also can't defend and also are questionable decision makers, you know?
Yeah.
And right now, I would say, yeah, he's been slightly above average or above replacement, certainly below average for NBA players. But, yeah, so far I think it's you can definitely say it's a good signing. You want to talk Bogey?
Sure, let's talk Bogey.
He's so good. Like we
right.
That's the one honestly like
you want to talk Bogey? He's so good.
Like, I know.
Andy immediately goes into fawning fanboy mode.
No, like I'm very validated
that was
with Bogey.
Some very expert level opening analysis.
Thank you.
He's so good.
I'm very validated with Bogey because, you know, when the Jazz signed all those players at the beginning of July, I did, you know, for each of them, like kind of a 1,000-word piece breaking down their game. Jazz fans, here's what to expect. And with Bogey, the thing I focused on was going through his synergy stats, how he was like 80th percentile in pick and roll and 80th percentile in transition and 80th percentile at knocking down catch and shoot threes and 80th percentile in post-up games and like 80th percentile as the pick and pop man. Like he just did everything super efficiently. And he's come out in the first three out of the first four games. He was injured in one of them. He's done exactly that. Like he's just knockdown shots. He's, you know, ran pick and roll six times and did a good, I think it was five times last night and did a great job. Was a pick and pop guy, got an open three. Like, was killer in transition, was getting to the free throw line, like, was attacking that little moment of indecision when the Phoenix Suns switched or, you know, would hedge and then get back. Like, he's just been excellent so far.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, it's interesting because, like, you just look at the raw stats and people might see, oh, one assist per game. Like, clearly he's just a black hole, you know, firing up three-pointers every time. And if you watch what he's been doing, that so clearly is not the case because he's making good reads. He's making, like, quick, instantaneous decisions. You know, he's, like, catching the ball out on the three-point line and seeing that he can drive baseline and either go for the layup or, you know, then subsequently kick it out to Donovan at the three-point line or Joe or whoever. You know, he's making these great decisions. He's making these great reads. He's putting the ball on the floor. He's bringing it up on the break. You know, there's been so much more to him than just, you know, he's not a spot up in the corner and fire it up from there and then wait for the next time he gets it. He's not that at all. Yeah, I've been really impressed with him. I think obviously that one game he missed, it would be easy to go back and look at how they did against the Lakers and say, man, if they'd had
Bogey
in that game, they might be 4-0. But, you know, who knows how that would have played out. But the games he has played in, just, yeah, you're absolutely right. He's just been incredibly efficient in all of those areas.
You know, we sit next to Tony Jones at the games, and we have this ongoing conversation of what percent of peak Gordon Hayward is Bojan Bogdanović.
Yeah.
And certainly they're different players. Like, peak Gordon's probably a little bit more athletic. Bogey's a better shooter. Peak Gordon is probably a better passer.
Yeah.
What percentage of peak Gordon Hayward is current Bojan Bogdanović?
I'd say I'd put it very high. I'd put it like 85 or 90.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's a lot. Like we were kind of talking about it during the off season as like he's 70% of Gordon Hayward, but at half the cost, you know, like,
yeah.
And I agree with you. I think he might be like more like 85% Gordon Hayward. And remember 2 years ago, Gordon Hayward was fantastic, was an all-star in the Western Conference.
Yeah. Good old he who shall not be named.
You can't say Bogey is as good as Gordon Hayward because he, you know, I don't think he's an all-star level player.
They don't ask him to do quite as many
That's true,
things.
Too. That's a good point.
But the things that he's doing it incredibly well.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, I would say 85 or 90% right now of what Pete Gordon Hayward did, which is exceptional, which is something else. Like,
and here's
probably not as
thing.
Good of a rebounder and not as good of a passer. So I'm gonna say 85%.
Okay. And that's fine. And I'll take that. Here's the thing, though. Like, I think the skill that he's better at, just the shooting, like, makes up for it. You know? I think that's a more valuable asset to this team at this point than having that Pete Gordon Hayward bring.
You would rather have current Bogey on this team than Pete Hayward.
Yeah, I would. I mean, again, we're coming at this from who knows what Gordon could have been to this team if he were second fiddle to a Donovan Mitchell, because I think, you know, time has shown that he was definitely kind of overtaxed as a primary offensive option for an elite level team.
Gordon was.
Okay. Yeah. We're coming at this debate from that viewpoint. Boyan as like the second offensive option has been pretty perfect for these Jazz. I mean, he's been exactly what they wanted to address, you know, that deficiency from what we've seen the Jazz in the playoffs the last few years, which is that it's been only Donovan Mitchell capable of getting buckets, and once the defense shifts to him, no one else could consistently, make them pay for it. And I think Boyan is pretty consistently going to be able
Has
to make teams
pay
for it.
Yeah. I think Gordon's a good enough open catch and shoot shooter that he would be just as good.
And I feel like he's not quite as good in that regard. That's just my opinion. I feel like as a pure scorer, you know, they're fairly comparable, but I feel like Boyan is a better just catch and shoot kind of guy.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's honestly probably right. Yeah. And then I would also say, like, to me, the passing and rebounding, even as second fiddle, is more important that you would rather have Gordon.
And that's a fair point. I mean, this Jazz team has kind of struggled with rebounding to this point. They are, through Monday night's games, they're 22nd in the league in rebounding, which you don't expect to hear when you've got Rudy Gobert on your team. And, you know, I think, and from having Fave previously, they were definitely, that helped them be
better.
Is that
rebounding percentage or rebounds per game?
That's just rebounds per game. I can look up the rebounding percentage.
SMH.
Oh, my goodness.
I think it matters because the Jazz have forced so many more misses than the average team. That they just have more rebounding opportunities. Right now, defensive rebounds per game, they're getting 85% of opponent missed shots. That's excellent. They are, however, second to last in the league in getting offensive rebounds, only 14.1% of their opponents, of their own misses, I should say. So, that's again through four games, but I would say the defensive rebounding has actually been good. The only exception being the Lakers game, and even then, having 11 offensive rebounds given up is actually not that much more than you would expect, given that the Jazz forced like
great.
50
you're
Lakers
just,
misses.
You're making my point for me then.
Yep.
Don't need that rebounding.
Don't need rebounding anyway.
Jazz are doing just fine with
Bogey. They are doing just fine, and that is a massive credit to Bojan Bogdanovic, who was the Jazz's best player last night, he's been the third best player on the team. I know Rudy Gobert is averaging 9 points a game, and he's been the best player on the floor in three of these games. Like, he's just so good defensively, no kidding. Of course he is. He's a defensive player of the year. He's at peak defensive form right now.
Yeah, because of Rudy and because of some of these other guys, Jazz are first in opponent points per game allowed. They are first in defensive rating. They are first in opponent's points in the paint allowed. They are second in opponent's field goal percentage. Third in opponent's second chance points.
Because they're rebounding.
Fourth in net rating. Yeah, their defense has been pretty incredible.
Yeah, I mean, that they're fourth in net rating despite their
being 28th in offensive rating.
Defense has been really, really good.
That's how good they've been.
Preseason was a mirage. Never trust preseason. I'm sorry for believing in preseason.
Yeah, I remember that really didn't count for anything, did it?
No, and like,
Are the Jazz going to be better on offense than on defense this year? That was.
That was a real question.
That was a narrative going around, and doesn't that look silly now?
Like I said, yeah. I mean,
you know, we actually talked to Emmanuel at practice today, and someone asked him, like, so, like, why has the regular season been so different from the preseason? And, like, he kind of got this sheepish look on his face, and he said, because the regular season started, and, like, we actually care now.
Yeah.
Like, he basically put it out there that preseason, they weren't, like, exactly going overboard trying to be great defenders.
I'm just shocked at how much the switch could be. Like, I knew the switch would flip.
Yeah. But yeah, and this I thought is they would extreme, be like right? a,
and I thought they'd be like, okay, we'll figure it out, and we're going to start the season and be a top 10 defensive team. That they are like far and away the best defensive team in the league is a surprise. And like last night, they were fantastic against the Suns. I mean, giving up 95 points to Phoenix, who had averaged 120, in their first three games, is pretty impressive.
Yeah,
and you got some misses and got a little bit lucky, but like. I mean, they only allowed 13 points off of 23 turnovers. Like,
yeah, that's particularly crazy. Telling. Because, yeah, it's like the turnovers have been really bad again this year. They are dead last in the league in turnover percentage.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, they were able to kind of limit – they were able to kind of negate the deleterious impact of that last night by the fact that their transition defense was improved.
Yeah, the only problem is, like, when you turn the ball over, you don't score points.
Yeah, there, like. There remains. So, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. So we brought up the fact that the Jazz are 28th in offensive rating, which is fascinating to me when you look at, you know, we've kind of put this out there as like a dual-strand kind of reasoning. One, the turnovers that we just mentioned. And like we said, 30th in the league in turnover percentage. And then there's all the other thought has been, oh, well, they're also just not shooting very well. They're actually not shooting poorly. They're 11th in the league in overall field goal percentage, in effective field goal percentage, and in true shooting percentage. So,
and they're 12th in the league from three.
Yeah. So, you know, what does that say about this offense?
I mean, I think the turnover problems will continue. I think they will be mitigated somewhat, but like I don't think the Jazz are going to be an above average turnover team. I think they're going to end between 15 and 20-ish would be my bet. I would say that I don't think they're going to be a good offensive rebounding team. They're going to, again, maybe they should be because they've got Rudy Gobert who should be okay at it, and then Ed Davis is one of the best offensive rebounders, but they just have nobody else going after those boards. But I think if they can get open shots and kind of raise that effective field goal percentage, and even though they're losing the possession battle, if you're so to speak, by giving their opponent more shots by turning the ball over and losing offensive rebounds, I think getting open shots and knocking them down should be where the Jazz have a huge strength, as well, honestly, as drawing fouls. The Jazz have been good at that so far, too.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing that really got them through last night. I mean, obviously, you have the very obvious example of Donovan Mitchell driving and getting a foul call at the end of the game and hitting the,
that was,
you know,
a critical free throw.
Literally, yes. Winning the game on a free throw. But even before that, you know, Rudy went, what, 10 of 12 from the line, something like that, or 11 of 12?
Yep, 11 of 12.
Mike Conley, even though
he was very excited to brag about it after the game.
Yeah, he was also very happy to get asked about it in today's practice. Mike Conley, even though he hasn't been shooting well, he's been getting to the line at a, you know, not a horrible clip, and he's been efficient there. Boyan has been, you know, not getting huge free throw numbers. I think about 4.5 a game thus far, or something like that. But he has yet to miss a free throw this year. So, you know, that's not nothing.
Agreed. And so I think I think this team is good. I want to talk about Donovan Mitchell a little bit.
That guy.
Oh, okay. Before we do, Royce O'Neal, real quick, has been tremendous.
Yeah.
You know, he's not playing a big role in the offense. You know, his usage so far has been 11%. Average is 20, obviously. But when he does, he's knocked down open shots. I mean, he's not going to shoot 50% from the field, from three. He's 6 for 12 from there.
Yeah. Not going to shoot 62.5% from the field.
No, he's not. But nevertheless, he's done that well. And then, honestly, I thought he made three really defensive game-changing plays at the end of the fourth quarter last night that made a difference and has been continuously excellent. You know, I thought he got the Devin Booker matchup last night and yep. did a great job of getting him out of what he likes to do. And Devin Booker still scored, I think it was 21 points,
21
right?
points, 8 for 16 from the field.
Yeah, so, you know, a good night, but not a game-winning night on a game where they really could have used him to...
Yeah, you definitely expected more of Devin Booker going into that, especially just because, for whatever reason, there remains this kind of lingering thing between him and Donovan Mitchell, as you alluded to in your gamer today.
My bad gamer, sorry.
But yeah, I mean that's Royce in a nutshell right there, isn't it? I mean that was the reason that we, you know, talked so much about him being the other potential starting forward for this team, because he's a tremendous defender for them and also a low usage player, which makes him fit right in with the likes of Donovan Mitchell and Bogey and theoretically Mike Conley once he gets, you know, if presumably he gets stuff going. And
have you been ever tempted to go back through your mentions on Royce O'Neal and tell people I told you so?
Have I been tempted to?
Yeah.
No.
Because I have been, and I did that search, and then I wrote out a tweet, and then I decided not to send it.
Probably not a bad decision on your part to not, you know.
But I told you so, guys! Royce O'Neal is going to start at the four, and it's going to be great for him.
Well, at least you didn't tweet it. I think that move has paid off fantastically. Royce is another guy who, you know, it really is kind of fascinating that he was like, you know, a training camp body that, like, they were like, oh, he did pretty well in, you know, the Vegas Summer League. We liked what he did there. Let's bring him in and see what he can do.
Yeah, and playing in Turkey, I believe.
Yeah, and now, like, yeah, can you imagine where this team would be without him? Like, not saying he's, like, completely, totally irreplaceable, you know, not saying he's one of a kind, but what he's brought, his skill set, and the fact that he's consistently improved on these other things have just made him a pretty valuable member of this rotation.
Yeah. National people are noticing too and are saying things like he's going to get paid, which he's going to get paid. And at this point, given that there is a cap on what the Jazz can offer him as an extension, he's probably, I would bet he's just going into free agency. Now
so
he's
what
he'll
you're
be a restricted
saying
free
is
agent, but I
stop improving so much, Royce.
If you would have just improved after you signed a long-term contract with the Jazz, they would have really preferred that. But,
yeah. Man, he's being selfish.
Unfortunately, this hasn't worked out well. Donovan Mitchell.
Now that guy. He's all right.
He's been really good, obviously, in the first four games. I mean, 24 points a game on 43% three-point shooting and 52% from the field is really good. The assists have been good. His turnovers are down. He's going after rebounds. He's shooting more free throws. All the good stuff. It's to the point now where I think he's improved enough that, A, he's taking fewer bad shots, but even when he does, when he's taking kind of contested mid-rangey, step-backy kind of stuff, it's still sometimes the best shot that the Jazz can get. Like, he's kind of at that level of stardom where it's not that Donovan Mitchell, every Donovan Mitchell shot is a good shot, but there are a lot of times where you can just give him the ball at the end of the shot clock and it's definitely going to be your best choice.
Yeah. And really, the Phoenix game was kind of the first time, and again, you know, they've played four games, but it was the first time this year where, like, he really did not look, like, totally in control out there. But again, you know, some of that was, again, him having to take, you know, end of shot clock, throw it up there, you know, be the guy kind of a thing. But, and here's the thing, like, I don't know that Donovan is ever going to be, you know, a pure outside shooter. Like, he has streaky moments. He's improved, certainly, this year, as you mentioned, you know. But
I don't know. Like,
you know, I think he's improved enough in enough areas, whether that be rebounding, whether that be passing and making reads, whether that be, like, his effort on the other end, that, like, yeah. I feel like the Jazz can live with the odd, you know, game of him kind of going a little haywire out there more than they could in the past.
I would say his catch and shoot numbers last year, like he takes so many pull up threes that I think that artificially deflates his, I guess not artificially, but it deflates his 3-point percentage. And I think he is actually a very, very good pure shooter. I would say that I actually asked Quinn Snyder on the defense thing if he would consider having Donovan play against the opposing best perimeter scorer. And that says a lot about where Donovan's gone. Now, Quinn gently reminded me that Royce O'Neal exists. And it's like, okay.
He's pretty okay probably, at that.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, Royce is going to be the best matchup there. But there are going to be times in the game where Donovan's in the game and Royce isn't. And in those situations, we really could see Donovan Mitchell guarding the opponent's best player and taking on a big load on the offensive end, which I think is, kind of makes him into a – he's obviously not big and tall like Paul George, but that kind of type where he's making an impact on both ends of the floor.
Yeah. It really has been fun to kind of watch him through his first four games just to, like, see – you know, an increasing number of these things that he's struggled with before become less of a thing for him. I mean, against the Suns, that was his first game of the year in which he had more than one turnover in a game. One in each of the first three. He had three last night, and, you know, you can make the argument, well, Rudy and Boyan both had more than he did. So, yep. You know, even the three that he had, not necessarily that bad. So, yeah, just seeing that increased effort on the defensive side, seeing him, like, getting bored, seeing him, you know, become a little more efficient in running the offense. Because there have been times, you know, for as much as we discussed Emmanuel Mudiay earlier, there are times where Mudiay is on the court and, like, he's the third choice to, you know, run the offense because he's playing with Donovan and he's playing with Joe a lot. And, honestly, Quinn just trusts those two guys to do it far more. And deservedly so, because, you know, we've seen the results with those guys. You know, which is not to say Donovan didn't struggle at times playing point guard last year, but you see the improvement happening. You see the progress happening.
I also wonder how much of Conley's foul trouble last night made Donovan less efficient from the field, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Given that, again, we know Donovan at point guard. Well, I don't know. I guess Donovan, a point guard last year, made him score more points, but the offense worse, even yes. though, the Jazz won those games. So, you know, last night was not that. Last night the Jazz won, but it was not because of Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah. And I mean,
because of Bogdanovic and Rudy Gobert. And maybe it was because of Donovan, because A, he hit the literal game-winning free throw and honestly was very good defensively. He had that great steal at the end on the baseline pass from Devin Booker that ended up as a bogey and one.
Yeah. I mean, all of these things play into it. But I mean, like, again, would this have been a game that they won last year? I mean,
no, because they were very
bad.
Would be
they
Jay
were very
Crowder.
Bad and right. They were very bad in close games. And yeah, you couldn't rely on having a bogey out there to hit a clutch three-pointer or to then find Royce in the corner for an open one. You know, it's like those are huge shots down the stretch that really kind of – I mean, again, Donovan's free throw decided the game, but they don't get to that point if not for those plays from bogey before that.
Agreed. Anything else you want to say? Do you want to do – excited about tomorrow's Clippers matchup?
Yeah, definitely excited to see how these teams match up. I mean – just given the sheer amount of turnover and chaos that happened this summer, like it really was interesting that the Clippers and Jazz were kind of the two teams universally lauded for making moves that kind of turned them from first round cannon fodder into like pretty legit title contenders.
Also the Nets.
Yeah. Although a year down the road.
Yeah.
Like they're not title contenders this year. Next year we'll see where Kevin Durant's at.
Yep.
But the fascinating thing to me, and again, you can read this story on sltrib.com. I've been doing some research into how the Clippers have been doing this year. Everyone came in thinking, man, that combination of Kawhi Leonard and Paul George and Patrick Beverley is going to make them just like unstoppable defensively. And that probably will be the case once Paul George actually stops playing. They've been killing teams this year on the other side of the ball. Their offense has been far better than I thought it would be. Just a few of the numbers. They're first in the league in offensive rating. They're first in net rating, even though their defense is pretty far down there. They're first in field goal percentage, effective field goal percentage, true shooting percentage. They're having a lot of they're having a lot of success in making baskets.
Yep. It will be interesting to see the unbreakable force, unmovable force, unstoppable force. There we go. Unstoppable force versus the unmovable object of the Utah Jazz defense.
Yeah. Yeah. We asked. Tried to ask Rudy about that at practice today, and you know, we got kind of a.
Don't ask Rudy matchup questions.
I know.
He's the worst person to ask matchup questions because he's...
We honestly weren't given a whole lot of choice today. They just said you have to talk to Rudy.
Here's
Emmanuel and here's Rudy, and that's what you get.
That's not how this is supposed to work.
I'm aware of that. Every once in a while.
Stresses me out.
Yeah. You weren't there, so you don't. You can let it go.
That's true. The way this works is we get to request people.
Typically, yeah. Today, like they were kind of like, could you do us a solid and take these two guys?
What are they doing?
What are the other
13 people on the roster doing?
Emmanuel actually had some good response to it. Like, I was not...
That's good.
I did not go in necessarily hopeful, but yeah, he actually gave some good answers, you know, talking about the Clippers' versatility and their physicality. He was like, he really kind of went on about their physicality. He's like, you don't expect necessarily that, like, just given the star power that they have, that they're a physical team. He's like, but... From what he's seen thus far, that was the thing that stood out to him.
I wonder if they'll have Pat Bev guard Donovan or Mike Conley. Probably you would expect.
You would think
Donovan. But
we'll see how that goes. Yeah, I'm intrigued.
I'm intrigued for this Clippers game. Yeah,
it's a good early test for the Jazz. See how they really stack up, and we can then like proceed to overanalyze it to death.
Joe would have been a good person to talk.
Invalid.
Anyway. I was looking up the Vegas line movements, and so they Vegas released the line for the game, having the favorite as the Clippers as 2-point favorites tomorrow. But so much money came in, actually, that the line has shifted in the last 3 hours, and it's now the Jazz are favored by 1.5. How about that?
Fascinating. I don't care about gambling.
No, I just think it's interesting what smart people think are, you know, how that goes. And obviously, I think people know that the Clippers are a better team than the Jazz, or they think they do, but with that 4-point home court advantage,
yeah,
looks like Jazz are at least currently favorites for tomorrow's game.
Yeah, we'll see what that Jazz offense can do against the 26th defensively rated Los Angeles Clippers.
The very stoppable force against the movable object.
Yeah.
We shall see. No, I mean, I think both of those teams are better at those sides of the ball than those stats reflect.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a weekly run this week. As always, please check out our daily coverage that we argue about on sltrib.com. We work very hard to bring you a lot of good Jazz stuff. I wrote 3 articles yesterday. For goodness sakes.
You should let everyone know about it.
I should let everyone know about it.
Andy Larson, you're my hero.
Yeah, thank you. I get that a lot, you know. Like, this was a big ego trip for me. I had, like, 3 different people recognize me in the airport. Anyway, I'm a very famous person.
I still value my anonymity. I can do whatever the hell I want because no one ever picks me up. They're just like, oh, there goes some other bald guy.
Yeah.
Wearing glasses. Like, nondescript.
There goes Andy Larson's brother.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's
whereas you, like, did everyone, like, totally recognize you, or did you get mistaken for Jim Gaffigan at all?
I saw your tweet on that last night, and it does feel like you're beating a dead horse. But
you should know this about me. Like, one, I'm not going to stop. Like, that dead horse is going to get beaten so hard.
What if, like, Jim Gaffigan dies or something? Like... Is there ever a line?
There will be jokes made about that. Probably.
Oh no,
I'm inappropriate, and also I don't know Jim Gaffigan personally, so
it's terrible. Anyway,
we might do a brief hiatus if that's the case, and then you'll get compared to Jim Gaffigan's corpse. So look forward to that.
I don't want that. Anyway, that's a weekly run. I'm hoping to not have that happen.
Yes, we're not wishing ill.
Please subscribe,
for the record,
to our paper and also our podcast. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud. For now, Andy Larson, Eric Walden, signing out.